before we start, one thing I hate about presentations is when halfway through I have a really, really good question at the end. I can't get ahead of this. So if you've got any comments or questions, or your name is Rick or Aaron, just feel free to interrupt at any point during the talk.
Also, we have stood in the wrong place. I was going to introduce myself. I think you all met me before, haven't you? So, Robert Lehman, Fireway. Hello. I run a small IT business. We do QA audits, data protection audits, write software, that sort of thing.
And you're a media darling as well.
Indeed, yes. Techno tart, as I like to call it. Now, what I'm about to talk about tonight is what I define as borderless networks. Okay, or borderless networking. It's not necessarily what everyone else would agree with, but that's the term I'm going to use, so you're stuck with it. It's only going to be a brief overview, it's not going to be massively technical. What I want to do is dispel some of the misconceptions, because there's a lot of cobblers being spoken about it out there in the blogs. Give a rough outline of what it means or what its approach is. I'll try and contrast it with the current sort of classic approach to networking and show you really where the differences are. First of all, I'm going to tell you what it's not, okay? Well, it's not according to me anyway. It doesn't mean just joining up with the customers and suppliers. This is really what Cisco will make you believe it is if you go to their site. They're really viewing it as the borderless network really means a sort of absorbing of your customers' networks into yours and having no border between the two. It sort of is that, but that's not the real reason for doing it. It's one of the reasons that the thing called the Jericho Forum, which I'll talk about later, came together. But that's not really what it is. That's the sort of Cisco view. And it also isn't about joining VPNs. If you've got distant offices from your company, joining them all together and having a sort of borderless network. So if you're in one side, it feels like you're in the other. That's also what you do, but it isn't the real reason for it. The big misconception about it is that borderless means you're going to throw away your firewall. You're just going to get rid of it and put your machines out on the raw internet. That's the criticism you'll come across of it out there in the blogs, which is, oh yeah, that's what the Jericho Forum are talking about. That's what borderless network is. That's actually what borderless network isn't at all. It's nothing to do with that, okay? And it's a really major misconception. The main reason for that is some of the marketing material from the people promoting borderless networks can be summed up in one line. And they ask a question, which is, could you, in theory, operate your entire network if it were on the internet? In other words, you would take all the components of your network and put them in various places on the internet. Would you still be able to run securely your network like that? They're not proposing it, but that's what people have picked up and think is happening. But the idea is that you should be able to have secure enough devices to actually be able to do that in the ideal world. We're not there yet because of the capabilities or lack of capabilities of machines. It's actually happening now, whether you like it or not. If you go to Wetherspoons or McDonald's and take your little Wi-Fi phone, you don't drag your firewall and your perimeter into Wetherspoons with you. You sort of take it on trust that the Wetherspoons network down in the counting house. Okay, Chris doesn't get it. We know Chris would break it. But you don't really take it, or you do take it on trust that it's going to be okay, but you're not taking your entire network with you. So this criticism of it in the blogs is actually not reflecting what people do. They wander around with devices in their pockets all the time that are attaching to networks. Now.
Run away every
function of SSH client. Don't start. No, actually, I'll come to that later. Actually, the answer to that is sort of no and sort of yes. But you wish you hadn't asked now. So, okay, fascinating as all that was, Robert, what the hell is borderless networking, okay? Well, the idea really is that you should recognise that your network perimeter, if you like, has been or will be penetrated. Okay, you can take your pick out of that, really. That's what it means. It means you should treat your internal network as a hostile network, as hostile as the raw internet. Okay, because even if it isn't now, the chances are it will be in future, or it may well already have been compromised, you just don't know. Yeah, same goes for this, the network in here. You have no idea whether the university's network is inherently secure. You might have a clue that it might not be, but you have no idea what other devices are out there looking at you, monitoring what you're doing. So you should treat your own network in the same way, because if it's compromised and you don't know, it's the same type of network. So in effect, what you're trying to do is secure every host you have, host PC or device or whatever you want to call it, against every other host. Now, you may already have heard of this, but it has lots of other names, and the one the Jericho Forum calls it is deperimeterization, which really trips off the tongue. And that's exactly the same thing as what I call borderless networks. That's the reason I thought of borderless, because it's a hell of a lot easier to pronounce it there. Deperimeterization at the time. Now, the Jericho Forum was a bunch of sysadmins in large enterprises who got together informally in 2003 to talk about perimeter erosion, or crumbling perimeters, as they put it. And they formally came together in 2004 and formed something called the Jericho Forum. Jericho, if you don't know the reference, was a biblical town which was believed to be really massively fortified, could be knocked down by anything. Some bloke came along with a load of trumpets and blew it down. It's not, you know, it's a pretty good reference, really. They basically came together to try and, if we go back to what I said about the Cisco idea of what borderless networks is, to try and get their networks to work together but still to be secure. Yeah. Interestingly enough, it was a chap at the Royal Mail in the UK who came up with the word deperimeterisation in 2001, a chap called John Meacham. I don't like the term primarily because it's hard to pronounce, but more because it seems to imply that you're going to go and pull down your perimeter, you're going to rip out all the fences you've got, deperimeterise yourself, and expose you and everything you have to the internet, which again is that misconception I pointed out earlier. That isn't, again, what deperimeterisation means. So, really, deperimeterisation and borderless don't cover it. They don't really have the meaning they seem to have. But what you might think is that borderless networking or borderless computing is where you want to get to, and deperimeterisation is the process, you know, the verb you're going to use to get there. So, we know what it is. We're going to secure each host and every host against every other host and assume we have a hostile network even when we're at home. And really, the next thing we're going to cover is the current approach, which you can see is this one, the sort of classic diagram here. Here's my perimeter, my file, there's the internet, we're all hunky-dory. This is the fortress approach, you know, it's the big castle with the entrance guarded by a firewall and so on. Often you'll have a DMZ, a demilitarized zone, which is where you put your web servers for public access. And the reason for having a DMZ is... Yeah, because you might compromise your internal network. Well, hello, there's a big fat clue to a problem. If you're having to put these things outside, that tells you that your internal network is a soft target, soft and easy. It tells you what the main problem with this is, which is you can harden the perimeter as much as you like, but once you're in it, then you're like the classical Trojan horse. Once you're in, you can let loose the dogs of war because you're past the firewall. Yeah. And every machine after that is liable to be incredibly easy to penetrate. What we tend to do is view this as an inside and an outside. Yeah, this is inside and us. And that lot's all outside. The internet's somewhere else. One thing about the word internet is it's a joining of two shortened words. It doesn't mean, for instance, in Gaelic, Scots Gaelic, the word for internet is etalion, meaning between nets. But it doesn't mean that. They just take an inter, it's to mean inter, between. It's short for interconnected networks. There isn't an us and them, it's all about being interconnected. And this model really is the us and them mentality, and it's the classic one. The other thing that tends to happen is you tend to harden the perimeter, harden the firewall as much as possible. You can end up over-hardening it, so you need to open a port or a number of ports for services inside your firewall, particularly if you're having remote administration or you're providing remote services to a partner company or something like that, yeah? Or you're wanting to administer your own website or something internally. Now, the problem is that that immediately compromises that model. Once you open a port in the firewall to an internal machine, specifically internal machine, you basically drag that internal machine right up to the perimeter. That's what you've done. You're not opening a port into your network, you're dragging that machine right up to the perimeter. And over-hardening leads to that. The other problem with this is there's certain things that will just go straight through. Skype, straight out through your firewall, straight back in through your firewall. You know that, that's why people love Skype. If you interfere with the way Skype works, it just works its way through all the protocols it can. It goes via HTTP, then it tries HTTPS and so on until it can get out and get in. VoIP usually has to go in and out through your firewall as well, and VoIP is terribly insecure. There's an awful long way to go with VoIP. I know you probably think, oh, well, Skype is VoIP, but non-Skype VoIP, if you like, it is very insecure and tends to have to pass through your firewall. You tend to have to open ports for it. The other thing is that perimeter defense like this often can't defend you against the black hat stuff that comes in via email or comes in from a website. There are programs around that you can install on the firewall to, if you proxy your connections, that can scan an HTTP stream for malicious files, viruses and so on. But quite frankly, if someone's going out over HTTPS or SSL or SSH, you can't intercept that by definition. You can't see what's in the stream, so you're stuck there as well. The other thing is, and I am guilty of this, there isn't anyone here who actually worked on my application. No, that's good. I can actually just pretend I wasn't, but I'm quite guilty of this. The attitude of we're safe because we're behind the firewall can lead to slack application design. Okay, I've been guilty of this. Most of my customers have run my software internally, and because of that, you don't build in certain safeguards that you would for an externally facing application. You maybe don't bother with only three attempts for entering an application, because as far as you're concerned, you're considering it as safe inside the firewall. You're considering all the staff as safe inside the firewall. So that's the other thing. You can induce a false sense of security. Now, the other difficulty with this is it's really two-dimensional, which was fine when you had a dial-up modem, that was your connection to the internet. But if you take it and turn it this way, you can see that it can be compromised quite easily by newer devices, if you like. If you consider a handheld device with, say, 3G GSM and Wi-Fi, BlackBerry or an iPhone or whatever, some new device or a current device, that you are required by your company to connect to the internal network when you're there via Wi-Fi, say. If in some way it's compromised so that a connection can come in over 3G, the access to the internal network is through a completely new dimension. Your firewall is not only not capable of stopping it, it's not even aware of it. It's living in flatland, and all these other connections are coming in through this other dimension. So, that's a three-dimensional view of the network, if you like. And nothing you do for hardening the perimeter there is going to change that. You could try building sort of the equivalent of a dome, but let's face it, the next new technology comes along and you're struggling again. And I'm not even talking here about rogue, which gives you another insight as well, rogue Wi-Fi points, that could be installed on the network, supposedly innocently.
Windows 7 believes now they've enabled access points.
Yes.
Then you're getting Windows 7, so you can turn it to an access point, and I believe it's enabled by default.
Well, indeed. I mean, I've also got Azora, such a little tiny Linux device. You can run host AP on that. I can walk around a building with something which is smaller than a notebook in my pocket, and it's a Wi-Fi point, So, but again, you can see that old model is gone, really. You should be thinking in slightly different terms. So that's my criticism, if you like, of the current situation. So, what's the big news? What's borderless? How is this supposed to help? Well, if you think that this model really is the fortress model, big wall, everything inside is safe, then the borderless model is more of a hotel. You can wander at liberty through the bar and in the public areas, but every room has got a lock on the door. You can invite your customers into the bar, that's not a problem, but your room's locked. So the model there is the motel, the hotel room, if you like. You might still have a great big wall around the outside as well, protect you from the normal threats. There is no need to discard your current firewall if necessary, and that again, as I said, is a misconception. But what you're going to do is to bring the perimeter in and multiply it to each device, each host on your network, so that each host is protected from every other one. The other thing that does, it tends to do, is drop the inside versus outside idea. You know, we're inside the network, we're outside the network. You know, when you leave your hotel room, you're outside the room. And that also then tends to mitigate so-called insider attacks, because if every host is protected from the other, then an insider attack is actually no different than an outsider attack, and you're already protecting against it. This sort of thing sounds like it's just for corporates, you know, the big lags and all the rest of it, but it's not about the perimeter, it's about the perimeters. So it's about a perimeter on everything, every device you've got. So even if you're at home, the principle is that if at home you've got a PC in a small network, you know, behind a router, and you've got a netbook, maybe an iPhone or whatever else, the idea is that when you're out to your netbook, you would protect it while it's on the Wi-Fi network and so on. The idea is when you come home to your safe network, you continue to use an encrypted communication method to share your files with your PC. You treat your local network as if it were a hostile network. The other underlying idea is that that should be a one granny solution, very simple. Now, you asked before about every client should have an SSH, every device should have an SSH client on it. The idea is more to use IPsec, which is a level 3 protocol in the OSI networking model. SSH, SSL, and so on are at level 4. So if it's done at level 3, it's pretty much transparent to you. You haven't got to harden your applications, it's already done at that level. You haven't got to use SSH because your comms are already encrypted, yeah, at that lower level. So the idea is it will be transparent. So when you did come home to your own network, it just assumes that it's a hostile environment and carries on working that way. So when they say borderless network, they mean treat your network, or deperimeterization, they mean treat your network as if the border wasn't there, not to get rid of it. Again, it's not about throwing out the firewall, it's just about treating everything as having a perimeter and bringing that perimeter a lot closer to you. The idea is to harden each device, to protect each device, not just the network, and to protect the data on the device. Okay, because there is obviously ethical hackers here, so you're probably going to disagree with me, which is fine. But I'm the one talking, so you can just be quiet. But there's two types of attack, really. There's vandalism and data theft, if you like. And I would say to you that all the rest are just subsets of that. Okay. Now, the black hats know their product. And if you're a black hat, you know your product well, you're not vandalizing. You want email, account details, personal information. So you need to secure the device and the data on the device. That means encrypting your hard disk and so on. That's what hardening your device means. Now, the other aspect of that is if you're running a hardened bunch of devices on your network and someone brings another device in, is you may need to have automated standards for what can and cannot connect to your network. What you don't want is for someone to bring in a device that compromises everything else. So there are packages out there that can do that for you. They are more geared towards the corporate and so on. But the idea is, the overall idea of the borderless network is that it should be as difficult to compromise individual machines inside the network as it is to puncture the perimeter. So instead of this, I can get through the perimeter and then all your network is belong to me, is when you get in, you find it's just as hard. Now, there are problems with this, okay? Each device needs management. Yeah, what's new? Yes, okay. You have to manage your devices most of the time anyway. When I discussed this with a couple of you before last week, you know, the comment I got was, well, if you go this route, then every user is going to have to manage their local firewall settings and, you know, deal with their own antivirus and so on. Well, welcome to the world of Windows, really. It's already happening, really. It's, you know, the perimeter's already been eroded and so on. You do wonder when you look at the approach that Windows is now taking, which is you have an onboard firewall all the time, as opposed to Ubuntu, where when you install it, you haven't got a firewall. So, am I correct? That's what happened to me when I installed Ubuntu. There's no firewall installed, UFW. Or if it's installed, it's not running.
It's installed but not running.
It's installed but not running, yeah. When I looked up why, the reason was because we're not running any services that are vulnerable. Right? Okay, I have many comments to make about that, but at least nowadays, and I know Windows was like that before, but now you boot up a Windows machine, first switch it on, and it does really take this approach to a certain extent. You still have the network neighbourhood that's available and so on, but you know, that's really perhaps a model we should look at more as Linux people. You know, they know, it's assumed that a Windows machine is easily compromised, but the assumption about a Linux machine is it's not, but perhaps what we should do is actually be turning the Linux view the other way around, which is start assuming we're just as vulnerable. It's just we haven't been hit yet. I know all the other arguments about no viruses and so on, but it's just an approach we can take. The other problems with the borderless network is VoIP really spoils the party. You know, it's not secure. It's a lot more work to do with it. It's a bit disappointing, really, if you look at something like Asterisk. Okay, it has, you know, runs all the VoIP protocols and all the rest of it, but there's nothing really there in VoIP that's designed for real security. There are some certificate things you can do for deploying to devices, but it's more about controlling the distant device that wants to contact you rather than inherent security. The other one is printers. Your average printer has no facilities whatsoever for secure communication. Absolutely none. You might not think that's much, but if I capture the PostScript stream that's going to your printer from where you're printing, I haven't actually got to do much work to see it. All I've actually got to do is two things. I can print it out on my PostScript printer, or I can just view it in Ocular, KPDF, Adobe Acrobat will view PostScript files. You know, that's a pretty good way of getting information out. The other thing as well is the higher end machines actually have a memory in them and can often store the printouts. You know, make off with the memory, thanks very much, or just work my way into the printer and peel stuff out. You know, so. Sorry?
Now we're on
website. Yeah, I know. The last three printers I bought have their own little web server inside. You don't talk to them via HTTPS. You can't talk to them via HTTPS, so it's compromised your borderless model straight off. Yeah, you can slap them on the back of a CUP server and use that securely, but even so, you know, there are problems with this borderless approach, really. Handheld devices. Now, they're often insecure, particularly because they tend to be closed. It's a closed device. You can't review it. You can't patch it yourself. Look at the iPhone. There was an iPhone rootkit a few months ago, which went through all the jailbroken iPhones, I think, yeah, didn't it? And, you know, that's a similar sort of thing. That's a device that people
compromised.
That's
because the owners of that jailbroke that system.
But it could be done. So, if it had been an open system, it's possible it could have been patched, you know. But regardless whether it was jailbroken or not, again, it's a possible compromise of your network, you know. And the other example I've got at home is a UT Starcom F3000 Wi-Fi phone from about 2005. I was telling Aaron this earlier on, and it's a little Wi-Fi phone. It connects to VoIP, connects to the local, Wi-Fi point. Seems great. Unfortunately, if you look it up, you find it's got an unpasworded, un-usernamed R-login prompt on it. You can go straight in via the IP to a VXWorks shell on the machine. Okay, and the VXWorks lets you then modify and look around and see what packets are flying past this little tiny device. Yeah. And I only found that out having had the phone for two or three years now, because I was looking up information for this, and I thought, well, I'll just check the phone. Yeah, sure enough, it was there listed with a whole load of other devices that can just be got in. Doesn't sound like much, but once it's in your network, it registers with a VoIP server. Remember I said VoIP spoils the party, yeah? If you can get onto the device easily, you can use the VoIP server to pass commands back to the phone and get it to do all sorts of nasty things on a notionally safe network, but it also rather spoils the borderless network party, as I said. Lastly, the other criticism of it is, yeah, but what if it goes wrong? Well, you know, your network, it's all compromised. Well, guess what? That's where we are now. Yes? If you're not doing it, that's the state of your network now. As soon as they compromise your firewall, that's you. You're owned. Yeah? Now, I talked about the Jericho Forum. They came up with some rules. There's 11 of them, so it must be really good because it goes all the way up to 11. And it's all full of corporate stuff, most of it. But the ones I put in bold here, you know, devices applications must communicate using open secure protocols. That's really interesting. These corporate types said they've got to be open. Whatever's there's got to be open. All devices must be capable of maintaining their security policy. In other words, any implementation must be capable of surviving on the raw internet. Again, that's probably where this misconception comes that that's what you're going to have to do. You haven't got to do it. What it says is, it should be capable of it. In other words, when you wander into Wetherspoons, in your cases, if you like, you should be confident that your device is as secure as it could be. And data privacy requires a segregation. Administrator access must also be subject to the controls. I mean, the problem is the admin who can do everything. There are obviously ways to counter that. There's SE Linux and AppArmor, which allow you to prevent root from doing certain things. Now, those are the commandments. Obviously, they're carrying the biblical reference here, and there's the link for it. There's also a practical guide to implementing it, which is actually quite good. It's actually quite practical as well. It's not sort of, you know, everything would be wonderful if you do this. It's quite practical and points out the limitations. They're well worth visiting. So really, and there's a question for you as well there, just to think about, which is really, you know, where is actually your network perimeter? You know, is it home behind your router, or does it also include your in-pocket device? So to disappoint you, if you like, borderless doesn't actually mean borderless, and deperimeterization doesn't mean deperimeterization. But we're in the computing industry, we're used to words meaning completely opposite to what they say, you know, it's the usual marketing thing. So that's it for me. I told you it wouldn't be too technical, it wouldn't be too long. But if you've got any questions, nobody interrupted me, which is, well, a couple of people did. So if you've got any other questions, then fire away. I do think it's the way we'll end up going. In some ways, it's drifting gently that way anyway. But, you know, if you've got a chance to actually actively do it, rather than be forced to do it.
One thing you mentioned about printer was this in America, this Athletic City Council, they had about 2,000 computers, a lot of viruses, and traced it all came from a line printer.
A printer?
A printer.
Well, that, yeah.
So, you know, I'm thinking, how the hell could it get to the printer but when it sends things, you know?
Well, again, you know, it's if they've got web servers on them, you know, as Tim pointed out, if they've got web servers on them, it's just a web server. You know, it can be compromised.
One is a library, for example, and doesn't have administrator password set, which means you can upload new firmware to it anyways. And if it has the capability of operating a web server, then it clearly has a capability of sending and receiving HTTP packets. So you only have to know the compiler you have to use and the language you have to use, and then you can write your own little web server that instead of whenever something is sent to the printer, it redirects it and sends it somewhere else.
Well, indeed, you just take a copy of it for your own benefit, yeah.
Very handful for university.
Indeed, and that's a big grown-up machine, as it were, you know, it's...
It's not an old example of people taking on the printers, the HP protocol itself, that they've got the login protocol for the HP printers. And you can overwrite that and write anything you want to the LCD screen as well.
Really? Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, these sort of hardware devices, particularly printers, they don't really think security. You know, how many of these routers have you got you can only access in through HTTP? They might say you can only do it through your local network and not the wider area network.
It's the same principle, for example, routers, because they allow local access. They don't allow global access, but they allow access within the subnet. So that means as soon as you have access to the local PC or even just the web page, you can redirect requests to the router.
Indeed. Well, I mean, I've seen compromised Windows machines where I've watched the squid log go by, and there it is trying to access all the router default pages and passwords. Yes, Aaron, sorry.
You touched on it before, the one crappy solution, but in this context that you're talking about, we're asking the user to engage in a way that we've never asked them to engage with before. We've set gateways in place for them and almost checkpoints that we pass your traffic through here, this will act as your secure gateway, will protect you. How do we now go about redefining the landscape for them now and saying, now you are in charge of your device?
But
I mean in particular, like we say, the one grand solution, how do we ask Aunt Thelma now that she really does need to understand why this firewall is saying what it's saying?
Yeah, but it's just
a problem. Excellent. No, well, really there, yeah, that's a good point, but there, really, as I said before, and I'm not trying to not answer the question, but I think we should look Windowswards in some ways, ignore XP and all the previous stuff. I know it's hard to do that, but if you look at Windows 7 now, out of the box, everything's switched on.
So is this an OS developer's issue, or is this something else? At the point now, I'm trying to...
I understand what you're saying. In some ways, Auntie Thelma's actually having to do it now anyway. You know, if Cousin Jim comes along and says, look, you really need antivirus and Norton's really good, she's having to do that anyway. And at the moment, there isn't any cure for that. Otherwise, you know, we wouldn't all be repairing our neighbours' machines when they go wrong, because let's face it, that's what quite often happens. How we'll do it, I don't know. As I know I've said before, most users need a AA battery and we give them a nuclear power station. So, you know, I haven't really got an answer to that. But I do think looking at the way Windows now does it, which is where it has a built-in malicious software tool, and it seems ironic to be talking about Windows at a Linux meeting, but it has the firewall switched on from day one, installed by default. It does make the mistake of talking about a local network and a public network, which is wrong, but you know, by default, a number of things are turned on. I think that's the only answer, really. Yes?
Is the situation with borderless networks like even more extreme than what you presented them now, because you've got extra services which are outside your firewall, not even controlled by your organization, which you're relying on, so like, you know, you may have social networking sites or the CRM things and stuff which are
posted. Yeah, it is.
How do you cope with that?
Well, obviously the original Jericho forum came from the big lads, as it were, you know, looking at corporate control, and they tend to have central control. But the issues that you brought up are usually already there anyway, with the current fortress model. But I do know what you mean. Once we move beyond that and everyone's gone to borderless, how are you going to control that?
The whole sort of borderless networks thing anyway is a philosophy to address what is actually happening.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they talk about perimeter erosion, and that's what they're really saying. You know, it's.
I guess though, it's like it seems like it's acknowledging that they can no longer have entire control over the whole network, and they have to.
They talk about
control has got policy and stuff like that.
They do use the word policy a lot. It's not the word I use a lot because it has too many meanings. But what they do actually talk about is they call it end-to-end encryption. But I would actually say what they're talking about is controlling the data, not necessarily even the device. You know, they do drift into DRM, so-called digital rights management, but not very strongly. But what they talk about is it's not just about securing the device, but it's about securing access to the data on the device. That being the product, as it were, that the black hats want, which in some ways deals with that. But what has also got to come away, I think, is the idea that it is someone's personal machine. I mean, likes, we have that sort of distinction anyway, in that we have root and we have our users, but usually distros are focused on the idea that actually there's just one user. It just coincidentally uses root, you know, to administer stuff. But I think that will have to be more enforced, you know, maybe even to the point where, in fact, you don't really control your machine in some ways. Tim?
I was just wondering, I mean, isn't that a matter above OS development, or rather, I mean, we're talking about firewalls and the use of securing a machine within a network to, say, rather than having it seen as an internal secure network, seeing it as a possibly not secure network and thereby manifesting security procedures so that the machine, if the network is infested, doesn't get infested. But isn't that just a lower view than the whole problem relies on? Even if you have a secure machine, say with a firewall on it, it still means that it's vulnerable to spam or, you know, viruses received via email and applications in general. So wouldn't that be just application security on top of machine security on top of network security?
Yes, in some way, and you are exactly right. And if you go back to the original drawing I had where it said things can, you know, you can't block the black hats sites, then yeah, I agree. But the difference is that you're sort of isolating the bad cell, hopefully. And yes, so you still would be compromised.
So yes. It's hard to pivot, though, don't you?
It does indeed. However, if you've got a monoculture because you've applied it across the board to all your machines, you're in just as much trouble. I mean, at the moment, borderless networks' defence is, well, if it all goes horribly wrong, it's no worse than the current situation. It's not really a very positive sort of, you know, that's not a very, very positive approach, because once the old-style fortress mentality is gone, what are we going to do if it gets compromised? So,
is the approach not just security in depth? Is there any more than that?
There is a bit more. It's to do with, I mean, I'd rather glossed over the idea that a lot of it has to do with it being transparent. So not only can the user not switch it off, but they're not really even aware of it. Yeah, so that the user hasn't got to use SSH or HTTPS because it's all actually done at a lower, you know, much closer to the hardware level. Yeah.
What do you think the level is when it comes to users and control and security? Do you think it's so much that you need to go out and tell people, oh, you need antivirus, you need a firewall? Or do you think it's so much insofar as actually teaching people how to use these products efficiently? I mean, what do you gauge of where we're at in the world?
Be honest, that if you look at the user landscape out there, and in fact, if you look at the people who came together here from Jericho, you know, they understand their user landscape, which is they're all DFUs, and they're all going to be, everything's going to be broken unless you take away their sharp knife and give them a crayon. And really, that's what I mean, it's got to be transparent. And I think what you have to do with educating the user is take away that burden of educating the user completely, really. I mean, you can't nanny them, but there's a difference between. I think the problem is at the moment you give them a nice sharp knife. If you get a sharp knife, you know it's sharp. You know you're going to hurt yourself, and you know, well, there are nutters with knives, I admit, but most people are going to be really careful with a knife because they know its problems. A PC, they don't. So I think what you've got to do is take away the dangerous toys.
Trusted computer model
going on,
they don't trust you.
It is, but yeah, it is. That's it, not trusting. But the problem is that the other side of that, it's a bit like Rick's talk on freedom and control. The other side of the coin there is Apple's idea of tying down the device and even tying down the App Store. You know, it's not really so much of a commercial thing, I think, as people think it is. It's more to do with trying to make sure their device isn't compromised. It's a losing battle, they've lost it straight off, really. But the other side of that coin is a device that's so controlled and locked down that it's not really yours, in inverted commas. It's an awkward position, really. I mean,
if you're talking within, like, networks within companies, then it's not really theirs anyways, because it shouldn't be used for any other purpose apart from work.
Indeed, it's a lot easier to, well, notionally, it's a lot easier to control. The problem is that the VP usually outranks the head of IT, and gets to bring little Johnny's PC in and gets to take his home. There are other things they've done here which I haven't really covered. One of them was where you have a portable device, like a netbook or whatever. What you do as a corporation, if you like, is you buy... Let me step back a bit, actually. Once you can secure a machine and come to that point where, as I said, the idea is that you'd have a machine with a hardened OS capable of just being dropped on the internet. Once you achieve that point, the idea is that you put that out on the internet, a mirror of what you run in-house, because there isn't an inside and outside anymore, and your distant devices, which you're talking about, are normally part of the network, but they might get taken home, connect on the internet to the same sort of server they would be using in-house. In other words, they're using the cloud, as it's now called, to run the equivalent of what they would run in-house as a suitably secure server. So that distant device, which the VP takes home, even when he's at home on his insecure network, all his connections go out to this secure...
He's never off the
network. Yes, because in effect, because there is no longer an inside and an outside, well, there still will be, you can put your control mechanisms outside in the cloud or whatever you want to call it, and your VP, he or she, can connect as if they were still at the office. So letting them take the machine home is no longer a problem. And if that machine they take home is also geared to think every network is hostile, then even if little Jimmy's PC is completely Trojan-ridden, his machine's still secure. So I didn't cover that either. I said, you know, there's a hell of a lot more. It really is worth visiting the Jericho site. It's not a... They're not trying to sell you anything. They've just got this view of things. Yes, Aaron?
It's a twofold question. For people listening to this later on, how many system admins are you going to think are going to be saying that, so, you know, about having outside threats and the impact that IPv version 6 is going to have on this model as well, or this model being needed greater due to IPv version 6?
How many of them are going to say, actually, or more correctly, why didn't you cover IPv6? Is that really what you're trying to say? I was going to, you're right, the borderless networking and IPv6 are fairly intimately linked. You know, with IPv6, you can get away without a DHCP server to hand out addresses. You know, what you could do with IPv4, it doesn't really work that way. There are millions of addresses. The thing with IPv6 is, you know, I talked about it, IPsec down at that lower level, you know, down at level 3 there below SSH, and IPsec has built-in support for it and for quality of service and so on. That's also important in the borderless network model, because a major threat that's not talked about, if you like, is denial of service. If you've got a notion of open network that's secure, denial of service is the problem. IPv6, I think, is going to bring borderless network in, whether you like it or not. I suspect that your iPhone is going to pretty soon get an IPv6 address. Yes, it's going to be internet enabled and that'll be it. I suspect that your telephone pretty soon is going to get an IPv6 in the UK address, because BT's 20CN or 2000CN or 20CN, whatever you want to call it, 21st century network, because it should be, not 20th century network, but 2000. They're going to make all of your phones IP based. Well, there's how many million households in the UK? An awful lot more than their IPv4 addresses available, still free. So how would you go about doing that? Well, you could NAT it, but let's face it, we can't have a whole... You could use the 10.0.0 range, perhaps. You know, you've got 16 million numbers there, but it's going to be a bit clunky when it comes to handing out IP addresses to everyone. So what would you do if you're going to have telephones over IP? You can use IPv6. Now, once your telephone's a device that's out there in the wild, which it will be, because it's unlikely that BT are going to say, yeah, you can firewall your own telephone system, then borderless networks, they're here whether you like it or not. And you really, really don't want someone to be able to compromise your telephone. That's quite bad news. For all you know, your mobile's compromised, but when it comes down to your home, you know. As for how many admins will just go, no, no, this is just crap to use the technical term.
The system admins now saying, but we've got that, so...
Well, yeah, but, you know, I must admit, when I first saw this, I thought, throw my firewall away, I'd rather repeatedly slam my head in the door, thanks very much. But when you actually look into it, it's not really talking about that. I do see an awful lot of difficulties if you move beyond, say, beyond NAT. What you have to remember is NAT came in because of the notional shortage of IPv4 addresses, and then has become a sort of, now deemed to be, isn't it wonderful? But it was only a way of a stopgap, really. You know, it does work reasonably well, but it actually leads to that false sense of security in some ways. If you see a local address, it must therefore be on my network, therefore it's safe. You know, that is not a chain of reasoning you should really be following these days.
I've BT technical trainers come around and say that it's a security benefit to be behind that. Less than one.
Well,
I can see initially why you would say something, but actually, well, that is the truth.
The problem is, I think, is the film moves very quickly, and what might have been true 10 years ago, probably even wasn't then, but it might have been thought of as true generally, it just really isn't anymore, you know. Yeah, Tim.
I mean, I don't see where one can end. As you say, it's the old view of internal and external network, and then moving away from this idea of having one border or on DMZ, where would one stop? Does one stop just at machine level, or is it just continuous until you make sure that no application ever used can access everything it shouldn't?
Yeah, it's the best answer to that. Because, well, an application is really a proxy for the user. So you don't want the user to go everywhere, really.
So
if you view the application as acting on behalf of the user, which is really what it does, then yeah.
Internet services should.
Well, why
didn't
that was a question then?
Yeah, I do actually think that's the way. I mean, once you start with, well, my communications need to be secure, you then start thinking, as I said, it's about securing the data. You then think, well, surely my application then should be secure. If an application can't trust any other host, which it shouldn't, then yeah, that should be secure. And then you go to the point, well, surely then if I can't trust anyone accessing the application, unless they've got the credentials or whatever, then I should really secure the data as well. So yeah, I do think at the moment the perimeter, it actually has to come inside the machine, in effect. It's got to come beyond the adapter. You have the host and the adapter. It's got to come into the adapter, which is roughly where it is now, into the host, and then right down into the data. You know, the secure operating systems, if you like, that have to be validated, really work that way. You know, the granularity is very fine of what you can and cannot touch. So yes, I think we'll all end up as, you know, our machines. If the machine's going to be an extension of you, you want it to be as secure as your liver, quite frankly. You know, well, certain exceptions in this room, obviously, but you know, you want it to be as secure as something inside your body, really, and that does mean bringing security all the way in.
In the future, it might be the fact that, you know, brings a computer in the DNA.
Well, you know, get a neural interface and someone hacks it, you're really in trouble, aren't you? Let's face it, if you wake up naked and covered in feathers and grease in Abyssinia, you're really going to want to know how that happened. I've always wanted to know. You know. All right, anyone else? No? Well, thanks very much. Hope you enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.